Hello and welcome to episode 14 of A View from the Dugout with myself, Chris, from Surveyor on the Budget. And I am joined by my co-host, a man who was the inspiration for the late 90s hit by Aerosmith, I Don't Want to Miss a Thing. It's Russ from Scotland Surveyor. How are you, Russ?
I'm delighted you didn't go with Dude Looks Like a Lady there.
Well, I mean, to be honest, it's been a busy day. I couldn't think of an intro. I was going to do a limerick for you this week, actually. I don't know why. I felt like doing a limerick for you, but I was trying, you know, not to have swear words in the first, you know, 30 seconds of the podcast. But anyhow, good to see you. Long time no chat. I think we haven't chatted properly since last Wednesday when we recorded. So few weeks it's been for the pair of us between just general life things, more so than Surveyor. How are things your end?
All good. Just trying to get some sort of motivation and enthusiasm over the quiet summer of Surveyor, which I've kind of picking up on with quite a lot of managers are a bit antsy and just wanting the European seasons to kick back in. I think the markets are slow and not much going on in the game weeks and yeah.
No, I agree. And to be honest, it's coming at a good time for me to be like that. I've had to just say to the missus, don't go into labour in the next hour. Just to make sure I can get this recorded. Don't want to have another solo one so soon after a previous solo one. That's kind of impending as well. So yeah, it's been a very, very busy time. So I just thought, as it's become our norm now, talking about, you know, a little bit of retro football talk, and it seems to be getting quite good feedback. So probably more so than my Surveyor stuff. But this week, I thought, I was having a wee drive, when I was driving about today, I thought to myself, do you know what, it's 30 years since the Premiership's, you know, launched in England, when they changed it from the old Division One into the, you know, the Premier League, Premiership. It's had a couple of incarnations over the years, hasn't it? And I just thought, what would it be a nice time to just have a wee chin wag about, you know, the launch of it, how it changed football, and also just some sort of iconic players. And obviously the big part of it was Sky and, you know, televised football and things like that, that, you know, becoming live. Because before that, you didn't get a whole heck of a lot of live games, did you?
No, you didn't. It's quite interesting. I've got a bit of an article to go on later on, maybe just with the history of sort of televised football and things. And it's quite interesting just the journey. And I myself, obviously, I love stats and quizzes and all this kind of jazz and things, but I actually didn't realise how little football there was on. Obviously, television's not been around, obviously, for hundreds of years either, but, you know, the sort of first 30, 40 years of television, there wasn't an awful lot of live football. But, yeah, the big game changer, as most of us know, was that iconic Sky deal when the trumped ITV by, I think it was roughly about £40 million, and changed the world of football as we know it forever.
Yeah, it certainly did. I mean, it's, I don't think anybody these days could think about, you know, a Sunday without, you know, Super Sunday or whatever. It's just kind of ingrained into football fans now, isn't it? So just before we even actually touch on the Premier League, and I think it's maybe worthwhile having a wee look, because I'm interested just to hear, because the first game that I remember being on TV, and I'm sure it was anyway, would have been Arsenal against Liverpool, and it was a title decider, the old Division One. And I can't remember the lad's name. It was, I'm sure Arsenal won it 2-0 or 2-1 or something like that. It was a game at the end of a season anyway, but I just seem to remember that one. It might be Liverpool that won it. I can't even remember. It was like late 80s, 88, 89, somewhere about that time period. And then obviously the World Cups, that's what I kind of remember. I remember the final of Euro 88, which I think that just appeared on the timelines recently because of the Van Basten winner and things like that. And I'd be interested to get a little bit more detail and background on it myself, Russ.
Right, okay. Well, we'll go for it. I promise I'll not bore you to death with it. I'll give you the
timer. I've got a long
version. And I'm probably on a timer knowing you as well. Okay, so the world's first televised football match was 1937 on BBC. And amazingly, it was Arsenal versus Arsenal Reserves. And that was the first match. The following year, they did the FA Cup final, following the success of getting a lot of viewers tuning in. 1954, the first World Cup with live televised matches. So that's quite a few World Cups, you know, that have gone obviously sort of televised before getting to that. And with that, as you can imagine, that it started the sort of commercial rumblings around sort of sponsorship and getting brands on the television and things. The first Scottish match, to my knowledge and to my research, 1955, and it was the Scottish Cup final, and it was Celtic versus Clyde. And then just to throw a wee bit of something different, in 1958, Grandstand launched. So I'm guessing there'll be loads of guys that'll remember Grandstand that listen. And obviously that was a full sports programme as opposed to just football.
Yeah. Do you know what, the intro song to that just went right in my head as soon as you said that. It's just, I mean, I remember it being Des Lynam, and was Bob Wilson on it, I think, was it Bob Wilson?
Bob Wilson wasn't on that one.
Was he the ITV one? Was he World of Sport?
He was on the other channel, but certainly, Des Lynam and things were involved. And these guys obviously all, as the programmes developed, obviously that was 1958 Grandstand, and that's mental. That's what, 75 years, roughly?
Is that about right? It's in there. What is it, 65?
65 years, sorry. Yeah. Pure maths. 65 years ago. Then in 1960, ITV paid £150,000 for the Football League rights. And that was the first year in which the actual league was shown as a whole.
Yeah.
Anglia TV, which you maybe remember from like the 80s. You know, it was one of those... when we had five channels or four channels, certainly for a while. And Anglia, I think, were like one of the sort of programme makers or whatever. They got involved in football. Moving up the timeline fast, 1964, ScotSport. And then a week later, Match of the Day. So ScotSport beat them. And that was, for any of our Scottish listeners, that's Arthur Montford. Was the original presenter, and then Jim White actually he gained his apprenticeship on ScotSport before Jim Delahunt. So there's a few presenter names. Match of the Day launched, as I say, in 1964. It was a week later, and it was a gentleman by the name of Kenneth Wolstenholme. I remembered the name, and I wasn't 100% sure on his football background, but it was more of a military background he had before becoming a commentator. A few other iconic names, certainly a lot of our sort of English and sort of British listeners will remember. David Coleman, Jimmy Hill, Des Lynam, and of course Gary Lineker since 1999. Lineker's been...
Really that long? Wow, that's...
Which,
23 years?
Yeah, a long time.
You've still got the screenshot of him in his pants from when Leicester won the league, though, haven't you?
I do, yeah. I've got it up, up on the bedroom wall.
Superb. Is that for the missus or for you?
Just for me. Just for me.
Good stuff.
1975, to get us a little bit closer, Sports Scene launched. So that was Archie McPherson for the Scottish guys. And in 1985, the iconic Saint and Greavesy.
Saint and Greavesy, yeah.
That was 1985. And that probably worked really well, obviously, with an Englishman and a Scotsman sort of covering both bases and giving probably a bit more of a sort of neutral programme on a sort of on your sort of Saturday television. So incidentally, one thing that I didn't know, just from my own sort of quiz knowledge and things, that the Sky deal that we mentioned, obviously in 1992, where Sky trumped ITV by £40 million for the rights that changed everything, that was actually the death knell and the reason for the death knell for St and Greavesy. Because they'd lost the rights, they didn't feel that there was any point in having the television show. It did actually, it was a slow death for St and Greavesy as well, because Euro 92, they allowed the show to continue for Euro 92. And then after that was the end of Jimmy Greaves and Ian St John. So
that's been gone 30 years as well. So there's a couple of anniversaries there then.
A few final shows. Football Italia launched in 1992, based on the back of the success of Sky getting so heavily involved in football and the masses sort of flocking to the subscriptions. Well, obviously, that was on Channel 4. And then 1996, Scottish Premier League was aired right across the UK for the first time on Sky Sports 3. So that was the first deal. I think it was maybe Roger Mitchell that might have still been...
Sounds about right.
Yeah, I've got Roger Mitchell that was heading up all the commercial stuff with the Scottish League. And then in final one I've got, 1998, the first team to launch a channel was Man United for obviously MUTV.
Well, there we go.
A wee bit of a timeline around the shows in 4 minutes.
I mean, it's quite thorough in terms of, you know, the history there. I mean, when it comes to, like you say, when the Premier League launched, I mean, it really did change the game in terms of money coming into the game. And that's when you start to see big money transfers, really, wasn't it? I mean, obviously there was Andy Cole moving, I think, 95 for 7 million. Then you had Shearer moving for 15. And these seemed like insane levels of money at the time. But, you know, a few years previous, that wouldn't have been something that was really contemplated in the, you know, in the game.
No, I think certainly late 80s, well, the TV deals obviously were slightly more balanced. Bearing in mind, $304 million for that Sky deal, that divided that by, there was 22 clubs in the first year of the Premier. That's about $14 million, give or take, a couple of hundred thousand per club. But up until that point, your Rangers and Celtic certainly could compete financially with any of the top English clubs when it came to wages. And we found that out when Rangers basically raided whoever they wanted from the England international team.
They did.
You know, when that happened. And the reality was that Rangers and Celtic obviously could match in stadium numbers. They could match season ticket numbers of any club in Britain. And at that point, they could match the wages. Now, obviously, that deal was the first one that really dwarfed any sort of Scottish football deal. And it's funny you mentioned the transfers there, actually. You mentioned a couple of ones that happened a few years later, but the very first year of the Premiership deal, Alan Shearer moved from Southampton to Blackburn, and that broke the British transfer record. So that was in anticipation of all this starting. And there was three other £2 million transfers that year. Teddy Sheringham, Forest to Spurs.
Mm-hmm.
Dean Saunders, for our Welsh listeners, Liverpool to Villa. And David Rocastle from Arsenal to Leeds. They all moved. So that was, you know, there was a lot of money getting banded about by the clubs as they got confidence, I guess, in the fact that this is going to be a long-standing, and I'm guessing they just thought it was going to be successful. When we pick up on that year, Brian Clough, that was his final year.
It was.
He retired that year. And the young player of the year in the first season of the Premiership was Ryan Giggs.
The first game was Nottingham Forest, was it not?
It was, if I remember.
And the first goal scorer was?
I wanted to say Brian Dean, but it wasn't.
No. I believe it was Teddy Sheringham.
I'm not 100% convinced.
I think it was, because it was one of these, because I've actually set all the Premier League years to record, because I have a funny feeling. Again, I've got a long time of staying up over the next few weeks and months, where if I've got a baby not sleeping, then I might end up sitting downstairs banging something like that on. I'm sure it was, or at least he definitely scored in the opening game. I'm sure he scored in the opening game anyway, but I'm sure he was the first goal scorer, because I remember turning to Christian when we were watching it and saying, first goal scorer on Sky was Teddy Sheringham. I might be wrong.
You know what? You might have been. You might be right. You might be right. I know he certainly was early days, but yeah, I think he probably was.
Well, the other players I've got a few players written down before we kind of skip over to some, you know, today's big news from Serie A. But I've actually written at the top of my page Premier League iconic players. And I went with, obviously, these are early doors. I've not went with anything more modern than kind of 95, 96, 97 sort of thing. So first one on my list was Tony Yeboah. How could you not have Tony Yeboah? The guy was a walking goal of the month machine. He had 24 goals in 47 appearances for Leeds. He was quite prolific. And he had those two goals, one against Liverpool and the one against Wimbledon, where it's just absolute rakers that you just don't see. Yeah. Next one, I think this will be one that'll be up your street, Russ. Tino Asprilla. Mainly for his celebration. You know, it was one of the first kind of bigger, you know, South American names, I suppose, would probably class it as, you know, coming into the league. But Newcastle were one of those teams at the time, weren't they? And I mean, yeah, only 9 goals and 48 appearances that I've got written down here, but it was more so his iconic celebration. Mm-hmm. Another Newcastle, he also played for various clubs, Shaka Hislop. Mentioned him, I think, last week or maybe the week before with the baggy tops, Trinidad and Tobago international. I just thought that every time you've seen him, but I didn't realise until I went and looked him up tonight that he was 6'4". The baggy jerseys he always wore made him look like 5'9" or something like that. So I'm going to save this one for last. I've then got Paul Ince. He was one of those players that, when you'd watch games, he was always one that was always got fired into a tackle. And I remember, you know, some of the boys in my football club I played for, they were always like, oh, we're going to get stuck in with a big challenge, early doors, like Ince and stuff like that. So obviously he was various clubs as well. Andy Cole, I mentioned him before, 55 goals and 70 appearances for Newcastle. And then in his first half season for Man United, he had 12 goals, five of which came against Ipswich. First man to score five goals in the Premier League in a single game. And the last one I put in, and it was Blackburn's SAS of Sutton and Shearer. You heard he mentioned Shearer there as well. 49 goals between them on the way to the title in 94-95 season, led by a Scotsman, Kenny Dalglish. Two Scotsmen, interestingly, have won the league on multiple occasions. No Englishman has won the English Premier League, which is always one that I always find amusing to think about. You know, their own league, never been an English manager won the league. So
yes, it's an amazing statistic that I'm not sure if I can see it changing, given who's at the helm of Liverpool and Man City, and well, there's Manchester United now and Arsenal. Yeah.
All the bigger clubs, it's going to be tough. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think that's one of the things in modern day, you know, people do go to the same tried and tested names, don't they? That's how you would always see Mark Hughes making an appearance back at a club, or, you know, obviously Allardyce and various boys that would always go back to the same clubs. It's even been the same up here. You know, it's the same group of names that always get banded about for every single job that comes up, which is why, you know, when Dundee made a kind of left field appointment for Gary Bowyer, it's a bit like, well, do you know what? It's not one of the normal names they get flung about, do you know what I mean, for us. So, yeah, no, that was just a wee bit of retro chat. I thought it would maybe be, have you got any iconic players that you could think of outside of those ones, or?
Not really. I just picked just three from the very first season that I thought were quite standout. So, Cantona.
Obviously, yeah.
Yeah. Mark Walters, who was playing for Liverpool after obviously terrorising defences up in Scotland for Rangers.
Yep.
So he was playing for Liverpool in that first season, which was quite good. And Les Ferdinand, who as a sort of part-time Newcastle United, I suppose they would be my team in England, having been to their ground and stuff a few times. Yeah, Les Ferdinand obviously was a player that obviously came through and ended up at Newcastle and stuff. And yeah, do you know what? All in all, I think the main thing was that as great as it's been, that I have to say, for me, one of the most iconic parts of the sort of the English Premier and Sky was Andy Gray and Martin Tyler. And I know that obviously it kind of ended up not in the fairy tale scenario as such in the way that they left. But
yeah,
for me, the way they delivered and the way they made it exciting, you would walk into the pub on a Sunday, and this is early doors, you know, in the sort of mid-90s, and it was just fantastic, regardless of who was on, you know what I mean? It would just be, the coverage was great, the analysis was great, you know, Tyler would be fantastic with the stats and the analysis, and Gray would be, you know, cheering everybody up and getting the tone in and getting everybody excited and stuff. And you know what? I just remember that so vividly, that, you know, those two are really, really iconic for me. And I think in my own personal opinion, I think they're massively, massively missed on live football coverage. So yeah, really good times. Happy days.
Yeah, I always like going back and looking at old football and stuff like that and finding some clips. So maybe see if we can find some clips and maybe share them to the social media pages and stuff. So we'll move on to Serie A. Now, I'd kind of put out a few bullet points that we were going to cover tonight. And one of the things I had put down, and I think we'll probably move this to next week, was a wee bit of looking at, you know, going back to episode one where we talked about, you know, community update that had come out and what had changed in those 3 months. And that I'm going to move out of the way, because obviously today, as Nicholas has tends to do, he likes to drop news on a Wednesday, is what we've noticed. Obviously the Scottish League, the community updates and various other things always come out. And today, arguably, one of the, you know, the biggest generational talents of the, you know, the current, you know, current crop of players, Kylian Mbappe has now become an ambassador. An exclusive ambassador for Serie A, and also a major investor into Serie A. So that's obviously huge news. That's going to attract eyes without any shadow of a doubt. You know, one of the premier players in the world. And I think, you know, having him come into the brand, sorry, Gerard Piqué and all the other guys, Mbappe's a massive, massive name. You know, at his age, having won, you know, won the World Cup and things like that, he's a genuine generational talent. And I think, you know, that's going to be hopefully bring more users onto the platform. What are your initial thoughts on it, Russ?
Well, it was just something we checked there. I checked two quick things just as you were talking there. And Teddy Sheringham, first and foremost, yeah, it was the first goal. So happy days, well done. Point to you, none to me. I should be ashamed. but the other thing that Kylian Mbappe, yeah, absolutely massive. He's got 8.3 million Twitter followers. Do you know what I mean? That's absolutely monstrous. Now, he hasn't been on Twitter for about 5 days since he was tweeting about the NBA. However, fingers crossed, I would think that he will obviously be tweeting his partnership details with Sarair. And like you say, the amount of eyes that are going to see that, it's going to spark interest.
Yeah.
It'll spark confidence, I would think, as well, if he's investing in it. And in the same way that, in a kind of weird and wonderful way, when Serena Williams was, you know, it was named as a sort of investment sort of partner and sort of advisor and into the board or whatever. These things just, yeah, they just spark interest. They spark press coverage, a bit of media. So, yeah, that'll be interesting to see the uptake. I'm guessing, and I don't know if you'll agree on that, I would think that first and foremost, you would like to think that the French market and the French user base should increase significantly. I think that makes sense.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, he's obviously a global superstar, and I think... especially when you look at France, I mean, you would have to say he is their best player. You know, I don't think there's any doubting in that. He's also, I was thinking about this today after I seen it, you've got to probably consider him, is he the most powerful footballer that's, you know, actively playing these days? Because, you know, if you consider what's been rumoured with his current contract in terms of having a say in transfers, managers, all these kind of things, you know, if you look at what's happened since he signed his contract, a whole raft of people have left the club, and, you know, new managers coming in and new, you know, different members of board. Yes, it's been a lot. And if he's going to have say on, you know, transfers and things like that, I don't think anybody, let alone of his age, you know, you maybe think a tenured player that's maybe, you know, like say Shearer when he was at Newcastle and he'd been there for a decade plus and things like that, for Mbappe to be at that, you know, power table, a team that's, you know, say what you want about where the money comes from, it's, you know, it's a massively funded club, and it's got to attract eyes to the platform. It's, you know, it might get people beyond that barrier of, you know, looking at NFTs or looking at crypto and then thinking, well, I don't really know much about it, you know, it's all a scam and blah blah blah. But when you have a look and you see a global superstar putting his name to the brand, that, I mean, Mbappe's not going to jeopardise his reputation, you know, and for user confidence, like you just said, you know, this would blow anything like a football index out the water, for example. You know, this isn't Talk Sport talking about it, you know, on an hourly basis. This is, you know, as I say, generational talent. You're probably looking at what him and Haaland being, you know, arguably the two top strikers or forwards or, you know, young talents. And I just think it's just phenomenal. I think it's going to be huge. And the little, you know, Q&A that they did, obviously it's quite, you know, it's, as I've said before, a lot of these things are going to be fluff pieces. You're not going to say, well, Kylian, what do you think of the prize pools? Things like that. He's not going to do any of that talk. He's going to
be...
He's talking about it. He's obviously got a bit of knowledge about it and things like that. So, and they were talking about, you know, user experience and everything like that. And I think it's going to bring those eyeballs in. That's what I keep coming back to. And I just think, you know, with the baseball launch in the summer, and now we've got this coming on board in time for the European rush, whilst the market is, you know, especially for rares, you touched on it at the start about it being quite soft, apathetic kind of feel towards it at the moment, because it seems like everybody's waiting on the either ETH to go back up or they're waiting on, you know, the European rush to start and things like that before they're starting to buy and sell. And no, I just think it's going to be, I think it's going to be awesome. As long as it's not, and I don't think it will be, I don't think it's going to be a Serena Williams thing where they launch it once with her and then you never hear of it again.
Yeah.
I think this is going to be front and foremost on branding and everything. You know, depending on what they've agreed with his likeness, I think you're going to see a lot more of that. And in terms of what, you know, whatever he's been paid for this role, you've got to consider, you know, in terms of a marketing deal, how much more could you get for a, you know, we're linked with, you know, one of the biggest footballers in the world with 8 million followers and stuff like that. So yeah, I think it's phenomenal. I think it's going to be great for the platform in the long run.
Yeah, I think like you say, that you know, that's big numbers on Twitter, and I've just done a quick check there just now, and there's only a couple of really obvious sort of alternative big names who are kind of coming to the sort of nearer the end of their careers. You know, 8 million is a huge number. I looked at like Lewandowski there, for example, 2 million followers on Twitter. Neymar and Ronaldo do trump, obviously, quite significantly. Ronaldo's got 100 million on Twitter there, but yeah, it's all good.
Just in terms of looking at Twitter, obviously, in terms of his followers, I've just had a quick nosy at his Instagram. So apologies for my Jesus Christ when you were talking there. 72.2 million followers on Instagram.
Yeah, I think that's only trumped by Ronaldo. Who's, you know, he's sitting about 100 and whatever.
It's just got wow written all over it, doesn't it? You know, yeah, that's, you know, that's what, a lot of eyeballs to kind of get it to. So
it's exposure.
Yes, 100%. So we'll see where it goes in the coming days with it and coming, you know, years and what have you. But I just think it's absolutely fantastic. So, yeah, kudos to Niklas and the team on that one. I sent him a cheeky wee tweet saying if he was needing any help with the threshold team, my DMs are open. It was just absolutely ridiculous. So that was that. Moving on to a little bit more kind of just general Serie A news. I mean, obviously, we kind of touched on just before we hit record. It's been a little bit apathetic for the pair of us when we look at our, you know, where things are. I've started to tire of not having the European cards. I keep buying more of them and I'm like, man, I just want to get into these European cards instead of, you know, looking for scores at 1 a.m. or having to wake up and see what's happened to my team. I want to see 3 o'clock on a Saturday and see what's going on in my teams and things like that. And I've kind of started to get to that point now. And obviously, I think outside of, you know, I've said it at the start of the video about, you know, my partner, you know, ready to kind of have the baby in the next week or so, it's my attention's been drawn elsewhere, and I've made some changes to the gallery. I did have a nosy at yours and did happen to notice that there'd been no transfer activity whatsoever. So I guess you're obviously in the same boat because you mentioned it at the start. Are you just waiting on Europe as well, or are you?
Yeah, I've found that, as I say, the market's been so slow. The changes, we mentioned it last week. I'm not going into any depth this week, but yeah, I think the Ethereum sort of imbalance has confused quite a lot of people. It's even made me a little bit just a bit more wary, a bit more cautious. I'm, you know, looking at what I'm listing boys for, and again, then I'm going and changing it an hour later and things. This week, I changed slightly tactic in the fact that I have listed some players. I'm trying to be quite brutal in my gallery and said, right, okay, am I going to use this guy really, or am I just waiting for him to maybe increase in value after a few games? So I've tried to raise. I'm sitting with an ETH balance at the moment, and I've been sitting with it for a wee while, just not really spending it because there's nothing been really taking my eye. I think what I will do is I'll probably look to purchase maybe another goalkeeper from Europe in the next week or so. And yeah, I've been stung in the MLS quite a few times. I've had some really, really good performances. And as I say, I've not really wanted to touch on my game weeks too much because there's nothing overly interesting for the listeners. But there have been a few sort of decent performances from some of the players that were kind of tipped over sort of the earlier weeks of the podcast. So guys like Suzuki Shimizu has been playing really, really well, and he continues to play really well. Marcelo Silva has been scoring really highly. So there are a couple of highlights. Paxton Pomial and Cifuentes. Franco Ibarra, I think I tipped him about 6-7 weeks ago, and I've actually watched him on obviously Sky Sports. You can watch on a Sunday. So on a Sunday night, the MLS is on. So I've started actually watching that every Sunday, which has been quite good. I suppose that has eased the pain of slow game weeks, not much happening. And I think the biggest thing for me is I've obviously built up that gallery, as I've said, from kind of day one of you know, total investment, 2,000, getting myself up to over, you know, 150-odd cars just through trading all the time. I think it's been a bit of a culture shock for me, because at the moment I'm sitting with, you know, I've gone from maybe, say, 6 to 10 offers a day to 6 to 10 offers a week. And I don't feel as though I'm really, like, overly pricing my cards. I'm obviously trying to get, like, a decent amount, but I'm not looking to be highly profitable at the moment on some of the trades. I'm just looking to kind of move things about and maybe freshen things up. So, yeah, just I've got my eye on a few players that hopefully might appear in the gallery in the next week. But like you say, for my gallery, it's been really, really slow. And I think that's the same with quite a lot of people that I've been speaking to online.
Yeah, it has been. And to be honest, I've been trading a wee bit of my limiteds. I had a look at it and I started to think, Jesus, I've got, like, I had 89 limiteds and 22 or 21 rares. And I just thought, you know what, it's a wee bit mad. I've got all these cards, blah, blah, you know, and I want to bring it down a bit and blah, blah, blah. So I did list and I did sell quite a few cards. And I decided I was going to put a few things up. When we had our kind of emergency on Monday, I was sitting waiting on, you know, doctors and blah, blah, blah. So I ended up, I listed a few cards. And one of them, I just thought, you know what, I'm going to just stick up Ross Laidlaw, you know, and see what I get for him. And you know, if somebody comes in with an offer and whatever. So I put him up, 50 quid more than I'd paid for him, and he sold. And I was like, oh, right, okay. Wasn't necessarily expecting that. It wasn't an offer. It was just a straight out purchase. But a new player had picked up two or three cards, and that was his goalkeeper. So I said, right, okay, well, I've got Ross Monroe still sitting there. And I'm like, well, what's the point in sitting with a backup? So I was having a wee look, and I went and got myself old Sahin Radlinger, made a return to the club for the third time. Cost me 600 quid. And when I made that purchase, I was sitting there and I was like, God, that is almost a month's house payment. You know, it was a lot of money for a digital collector card. But yeah, I picked him up, and that's me back to my two goalkeepers. The only problem is the Riyad backup doesn't have a card at the moment. We'll have to wait till the new season ones come in, but I'll pick that up when it does. And I picked up a few, because I realised that after I picked him up, I had three Austrians, and I had a look. Their season actually starts a week before the Scottish League does. They start the weekend of the 23rd, I think it is, of July. So I thought to myself, yep, perfect, I'm going to go and pick up a couple of extra ones. So I did, and I was quite happy with that. And then yesterday, somebody sent me a DM asking me what I thought about Melkerson from Hibs as a forward. And I was like, you know what? Yeah, I think he'll get some decent game time of it. You know, they have signed a new player, obviously Nisbet, to come back, blah, blah, blah. And I said, you know, a better option might be Bruce Anderson of Livingston. And I thought, I'll go and have a look and see what his price is. And I went and had a look at his price. And there were no rares on the market, but what there was one had just appeared in Pavel Trader's gallery. Well, I've got this Ross Monroe card here. So I sent it over with an offer of that plus 0.08, which was 0.166 for a card that's 3-day average was 159. And he accepted it, because I thought I was going to have to send some more ETH, but I don't know if it's because of the volume of ETH that went with the deal that maybe he's collecting ETH, you know, speculatively or whatever it may be. But I mean, it was half the deal was in ETH, and he insta accepted it. It's one of those where you go, oh man, what have I done? Could I got away with maybe just sending 40 or something, you know? But no, I mean, it was only 0.007, so it was like less than 7 quid over the 3-day average for Bruce Anderson, and he took it. So that's been a massive one for me. I'm absolutely delighted to have him in the gallery, and that's been my big change. I needed an extra striker. I was looking at one in Austria. I should have actually probably put him in my ones to watch for later, but I haven't done that. So, but it was Christoph Munchin. He's just signed for Riyadh from LASK. He was on loan at Altach last season. Saved them from relegation, basically. And he was sitting at about 0.09. And I was going to buy him, and I ended up with this, you know, more expensive card. So, hey-ho. That's how the cookie crumbles sometimes, but it saves me from having too many players of one team, you know, basically putting in a four player stack of a mid table team. It's not worth having a full stack of a mid table team, really. So yeah, that was that. But it has been quite slow. Other than the limiteds, I find the limiteds sell quite easily. You put them up, you do get them away quite quickly because you're only spending £1, £2. You're not spending £100, £150, £200. So it's a lot easier for people to go, do you know what, I'll take a punt on that for £1. I'll take a punt on that for £2. So I think that market's okay, but like you say, the rares are slow. So I think maybe when you put offers to people, I mean, I said for the Lotrus Vili, the defender from Wolfsburger that I picked up, had him before. And I sent the offer, and the guy had him listed at 0.1, and I sent 0.085, and he just accepted it. And I'm thinking, like you say, there is an apathy. People are just like, you know what, I'll just get the ETH in.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, it's just me. I've got a card that I paid 180 quid for back in February, and I've just re-signed them for £84.
Yeah.
Hard to complain.
I think the there are some people, and I would envisage that it would make perfect sense for Pavel to gather every bit of ETH that he possibly could, given the extent of having however many cards he's got these days. He's always going to have turnover. He's always going to have players that will have a big red cross coming into him that next season won't have a big red cross. You've seen it so many times that players will go in and out of leagues. I think he's probably wisened up a little bit on the guys at the end of their careers. I don't see as many sort of 36, 37 plus cards arriving in his gallery like, say, maybe a year ago where there was all the Russians that were all retired and stuff. Obviously, for anybody that's wondering what the hell we're on about as well, because I did actually get picked up on it probably about 4 or 5 weeks ago about Pavel. So Pavel Trader is a big-time trader in the game, one of the earliest accounts in the game, and ultimately you can send him a trade offer of your card plus, I think, is it 15 to 20% he looks for, Chris?
Yeah, I think it seems to depend between 10, 15 and 20. We speculated previously there was 3 or 4 people running the account because it's too big an account for one person to run. And it seemed to depend what time of day you send the offer, what got accepted. But yeah, it's generally about 10, 15, 20% over usually the average. But I have seen on occasion recently where maybe there's not as many of the cards. He's going with market value for his card, but only 3-day average for your card. So it can be a bit frustrating with it. But as you say, it's a way to get rid of dead cards in your gallery, isn't it? Because once nobody's going to buy, you could trade them into Pavel. So
I think, like anything else, he's running it as a business. It has to be profitable for him. Some you'll win, or some you'll feel you've won, and some you'll lose. And I think that's the way that I probably, if I'm being as sort of analytical on my own trade dealings, there are many that I've felt that I've been sort of ahead of the game with them and got good deals. And there's a couple that I thought have been ahead of the game, and then the players just not worked out or whatever. And then the players' values actually ended up, you know, plummeting or certainly falling. So it's win some, lose some with them. But the facility is there that you can send him an offer if you're listening and you've got a few cards that you don't want and you've tried selling them on the marketplace. You can look at it and you can send him a direct offer, and it probably makes sense to browse his gallery first into what you're looking for. He doesn't have all his cards listed either, which it's probably an impossibility now because it's thousands of cards he's got. However, it's the option is there. It's something to look at. I think he's one of quite a few. I think there's a few people still buying galleries and things. I'm not as quite up to date as I used to be maybe 6 months ago with who was all buying, but I think maybe Super Usman's another. And
yeah,
I think there's a couple more floating about. But you can look at these things on the Discord, the official Discord channel, if you need a bit more information on that. Apart from that, I think one of the things that we did notice, Chris, was that we probably should have mentioned was the new competition that's coming.
I was going to flow into that. If anybody is looking to sell a gallery, I have a contact for Super Usman. and it's usually pretty decent offers. So if you are looking to batch sell any cars, fire him a DMs and I'll put you in touch. The new competitions that have come up, I've actually just closed the tab. There we go. So they launched a new game week calendar for week 285, which is next midweek, I believe, because this weekend's 284. So 285 to 288, so it gives you a couple of weeks worth of fixtures. It is fixtures in real world. But for your SO5 competitions, there's a new one that's launching, and that is the Academy. Now, that's actually launched this week, so that's going to be in there now. And it's basically for new managers, and it's a step up from just playing the casual, because it gives you the opportunity to use a maximum of 2 limited cards in that team. Now, if you enter any competition that requires limited cards, rare cards, super rare, or unique cards, so basically any bought cards, if you enter a league like Specialist Limited or All-Star Limited or All-Star Unique, you won't be able to participate in this league. It's exclusively for people who haven't entered any other competitions. Now, the good thing is, it's not a league as such. I don't know. There might be a league aspect of it. I haven't actually had a look to see if that's shown. But the way that it is, it's a rewards based. It's similar to the thresholds, I would say, Russ. So if you score over 110 points, it gives you a tier two common. So the first three levels are all commons. Over 165 is a tier one. Over 300 points is a tier zero common. But when you get over 400 points, it's a tier three limited. And when it's over 450, it's a tier two limited. Now, obviously, I had a tier two limited a few weeks ago, and that was Lewis Morgan, and I sold him at the time for about 50 quid or 55 quid, whichever it may be. So tier twos can be, they could be good. They could also be 10, 15 quid. But if you're only entering two cards, it's not that bad. What they've got, to go with that, Russ, your two limited cards have a 40% bonus on them.
Yeah, seen that.
And your captain has a 20% bonus the same way it does in anything else, apart from the specialist and underdogs, that kind of thing. But that could mean, you know, if you've got two limited cards that score 60 points, you're going to get an extra 24 on top of that, that sort of thing. So you end up with 80 points from the two of them. And then you're just in your three common cards that could be worldies that you've got in your gallery. You could have, you know, let's say what Neuer, Lewandowski, and somebody else that's just scoring for fun, and you could slide them in your two common cards, and bang, you're able to win limited cards. So as a new start manager or somebody that doesn't want to invest hugely, a couple of common cards for 5-10 quid, bang them in, and there you go, you're entered into the competitions that actually win valuable cards. I think that's again, it's another one of these baby steps, isn't it? I mean, nothing's perfect, but it's a baby step into the market, and it gives an opportunity for these, you know, these new managers to have a crack at it. And I think we spoke about it a few weeks ago, Russ, when we were talking about the three clay, that the, you know, once they get a taste of it, it's like, okay, I enjoyed that. What can I do now?
Yeah.
And I think that breeds into the game, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's basically you're able to now play a competition where you can win things. And again, you're against yourself and you're against the score as opposed to being against other managers. And yeah, you can play with two cards. So you're talking what, like you say, you can maybe get two really decent cards for £10, definitely. Yeah,
totally. And I think even now, see if you're buying them now for, 4 weeks, 5 weeks time when the Scottish League starts, for example, there's still decent cards kicking about for £1 and £2, you know. You could buy them now and set them aside for a few weeks and then put them in when you're good and ready. So, yeah, I think that's really good. There's a couple of other ones that have kind of come in. There's going to be obviously the three clay, but they're going to upgrade that for super rare and for uniques. So obviously if you needed five, you could actually just play with three, things like that. There's also going to be a specialist makeover, and there's going to be an over 32 specialist and an under 23 specialist. So that's going to be quite interesting. But the more interesting part of that was the prize pools for those will only reward DNP players. Players who have not played in at least their last five games. So that could be, for example, the likes of a Bruce Anderson that I just got, worth 0.16. Well, that was his last sale price in the auctions. But he's not going to be in the prize pools just now because he's a DNP. So now they're going to be introducing that. Now, there's obviously been a bit of conjecture because people have said for a long time, put the DNP cards into the prize pools to enhance the prize pools. And if it means you're sitting on a card for 6 weeks waiting on a guy coming back from an ankle injury or a knee injury or something like that, but it's a valuable card, I'd rather have that over getting a 40 quid Russian card that's no use to me or something like that. You know, from like, I had that in one of the last rare leagues where I got a card in Challenger Europe and it wasn't any use to me. But I'd rather, you know, if I can get a player that I'm like, oh God, he's out with an injury, he's back in, like I say, back in 6 weeks' time, boom, I could slide him into there. So I think that's going to be interesting. And hopefully it's a trial that they might end up expanding on, Russ, you know, just to enhance the prize pools after the summer, I think.
Yeah, it's been a long, sort of long conversation on social media, certainly, prize pools. And it's every week you see somebody speaking about it and either giving a suggestion or a moan or whatever, you know, just in relation to it. I'm not adverse to DNPs being in there. Like, for example, you've got Kevin Nisbet at Hibs, that is out till the end of October, November. If he was fit and starting the season in August, like the rest of the strikers, he would be in the top six or seven of the sort of bookmakers' odds to be top scorer in the league.
Yeah.
So, you know, for guys like that to be in a DNP, just a complete off-the-wall one, for example, I had him myself last year, Noble Okello in the MLS, a long-term injury over there. You know, guys like that, you wouldn't mind, and these guys have still got, you know, they've still got value, and even if you're getting a DNP card that you can then sell, it's still better than getting nothing.
Absolutely, absolutely. Just on the under-23s, now this might be complicated for any new users. It's complicated for some older users who've been around for a while, but the cutoff for the under-23 age is coming up after this weekend. So you may have cards that will have their under-23 eligibility disappear after this weekend. So basically the cutoff is July the 1st. So if before July the 1st, your player has turned 24, they'll no longer be eligible. However, if that player actually turns 24 on the 1st or on the 2nd of July, they're still going to have a full year's eligibility as an under 23. So worth having a wee look. You will see that disappear after this weekend with it all changing over. But basically, they have to, if a player is born before July the 1st, 1998, they will no longer be eligible for under 23 after the weekend, Russ. So I think that's probably the easiest way to look at it. It's a tough one to explain. Just look and see when the star 23 disappears. That's what it means. And you might actually see some of those star 23s that you've been maybe looking at and thinking, I'd like to buy him, can't afford them or whatever. As soon as that 23 drops away, you might see the price start to drop down a wee bit on some of those cards, eh?
Definitely. There's quite a few sort of obvious ones in sort of River Plate and Boca and things that, you know, they've got really, really high values. Also over in Ajax and things. And these guys are a way to lose their wee 23 badge. Delighted to say, obviously, from a personal perspective, that the Jackson Maleka date of birth has been fixed on Surreal Data. It was 2 years out. Yep. And I've been campaigning, sort of one-man mission, to get it changed. I hold them in my gallery as they're there. So Mr. Maleka's has been changed and will be remaining at 23 for the forthcoming season. But, yeah, just like everything else, it changes things up. It'll change who's competing at the top. So there'll be guys, you know, I know a couple of guys myself that have got strong 23 galleries that are having to make changes because some of the players they've been using this year are no longer eligible. So it'll weaken them to an extent until they sell them and replace them.
Yeah. And like I said, it may give, you know, some of the users who've been sitting wanting that particular player, but because they were under 23, couldn't get them. Yeah. You might have an opportunity to get now. Not necessarily saying the prices will drop on them, but you'd expect maybe a bit of movement on it, eh? So that's going to move us on from the specific Surreal news on to some Scottish news, which we, again, has become our niche, Russ. Yep. Fancy that, the Scottish guys with the Scottish news being a bit of a niche market for that, eh? So I'm going to throw it over to you and I will chip in. You've got, I believe you've got the actual confirmed transfers.
Yeah.
I'll chip in with some rumours that I've seen as we go.
Yeah, it's been busy at Pittodrie, so that's the home of Aberdeen. So I think you pronounce it Kel Roos, the goalkeeper, has joined from Derby County. So he has joined and Gary Woods has been released.
Mm-hmm.
Aberdeen have also signed Bojan Miofsky. There's no card for him to my knowledge. He's come from MTK Budapest, which is their second signing from that club. Declan Gallagher, who I hold myself in both rare and super rare, has moved from Aberdeen to St Mirren. He has a card in the game and obviously will still be eligible. Unzu Ojo, we mentioned in one of the, I think it was maybe episode 5 or episode 6, that I really had strong feelings that he would go lower league in England, and he has. He's returned to Port Vale, so his card will... They're a league below the Championship, so they can't score. They were promoted this year. However, that's a non-scoring card that'll get a red X against it. And the final wee bit of Aberdeen news is Kevin Hunrati has joined our local sort of club, Forth Athletic. No card in the game, incidentally, however, for a few of, I know we've got a few Forth for listeners, so I had to mention that one. That's what I've got for Aberdeen.
The only rumour that you've not kind of covered off there in terms of ones that I'd seen and actually appeared today, and it's one that's been long speculated, but that was Christian Ramirez has been linked with a move back to the MLS. So obviously he reappeared after a long saga of, is he coming back? Is he not coming back? To be honest, having looked at the training photos, having watched some of the highlights at the weekend there of their game against Bucky Thistle, he did not look a happy man. He did not look a happy man. So yeah, I would foresee him moving back to the MLS. But they did sign, obviously, the Macedonia striker. Was that last week? The lad there. He's coming with tremendous reputation, so that could be a big signing for Aberdeen. I posted on Twitter, just as an aside, just before we move on to the next club, that I see Aberdeen and Hearts have really decided not to fuck about with their signings this summer. They've really kind of gone in and, you know, hard and heavy with the business. Aberdeen obviously flush with the cash from Calvin Ramsey, and Hearts, you know, 15,500, 16,000 season tickets plus guaranteed European football till Christmas. So yeah, neither of those two teams are messing about. So sorry, I'll let you move on to your next club.
The next one that I've got any action at, so Celtic, it's all rumours still, so there's lots of players being linked with Celtic. Yeah. You know, Scottish press, Celtic, Rangers, it's like half a dozen names every day, until they actually sign. It's kind of, you know, it almost feels pointless speculating on them to an extent because there's so many players. But Hearts, I think just as the podcast aired last week, Alex Cochran, we certainly spoke about him. He went permanent from Brighton, and they've also signed Jorge Grant, who was quite an attacking midfielder from the English lower leagues. He was at Peterborough last season. Just from a fancy football sort of knowledge, he should do really, really well. If there's a card comes out of him, I think it would be quite a good acquisition. So, and he signed I think it's a few years of a deal there at Hearts. So, like you say, them and Aberdeen are spending the money, they're strengthening their squads, they're getting what I would class as either unknown quantities, which, you know, like I'll be honest, I know nothing of Bojan Miosky, but I'm guessing that he's hopefully been really, really well scouted, and they're thinking that he can adapt to the Scottish game and can score goals. So when you're looking at these clubs bringing in players and bringing in numbers, you're hoping that they're, you know, it's not just squad guys. This is first teamers they're bringing in. So that's what I've got for Hearts, Cochrane and Grant.
Yeah, and the only other one has just been the ongoing saga with Lauren Shankland. Again, it was mentioned, but there's not been an awful lot beyond. Again, you see one rumour coming from Belgium where they say there's been no conversations, and you see the other conversation coming from sources within Hearts saying there is conversation. So I still foresee that deal going through, to be honest. But when you look at, like you say, you know, obviously you mentioned it last week, the two wingers, Forrest and Mackay, Boyce up top with a Shanklin. Now you've got the boy, Georges Grant, behind them. It's a strong, strong looking team. And I'll be interested to see. I mean, I'm not a Robbie Nielsen fan by a long shot, but I think that might be quite an interesting one to look. The Aberdeen fee was rumoured, they were quoted apparently 1 million euros for Majovski, was what they were originally quoted, allegedly, which is about £850,000. So I don't think they've paid as much as that, but they've certainly paid a six-figure fee for him. And Hearts also paid that for Cochran. So it's unusual, I would say, out with the old firm to see big fees, isn't it?
Yeah, in truth, out with the old firm. I think, to my knowledge, there's only ever been one £1 million plus fee ever in the sort of history of Scottish football. So, yeah, we, you know, the provincial clubs will generally spend anything from obviously a free transfer with high wages to sort of really circa 400,000-500,000 tops for players. So it's kind of somewhere at that lower end of English Championship, higher end of sort of League One sort of relevance of fees. It's just crazy, you know. Just to put that in comparison, I noticed that I think it was Burnley signed a player this week. His name escapes me. Give me 2 seconds though. But it was like it was well over. It was six figures. And obviously, as I say, I play quite a lot of English fantasy football league, and I just wasn't really up to date. It was Luke McNally joined from Oxford United for 1.8 million. And I'm looking, thinking, You could have had Lewis Ferguson for that, probably. Do you know what I mean? That's absolutely bonkers. You know, they've, I think they've spent $3 million on Luke McNally and Scott Twine from MK Dons. And don't get me wrong, MK Dons, Twine scored a lot of goals last year and looked a decent striker for them. But you just look and go, could you have spent that money a bit wiser north of the border? You probably would have got it. You would have got the players. So, yeah, like, you know, Scott Twine or like Shankland, for example, that's been quoted at, what, 500,000,
600,000? Yeah, totally.
You're looking and going, one guy's got a wee bit of a sort of higher pedigree at a higher level, to be honest. Whether you, you know, I know you're not a Shankland fan, obviously, as a Dundee supporting fan, but it's certainly, it probably makes more sense than signing some of these guys from lower league England.
Well, I mean, I would say that Burnley are in the second tier, and he's renowned at scoring in the second tier, so he just can't do it in the top tier. So, but yes, no, I would agree with that, and I think both those clubs are going to have big seasons. So, anything else you've got there?
Yeah, I've just got something. Hibs, David Mitchell has moved to Partick. There's no card for him. Eli Ewan, I think it's from St Gallen. I'm not sure how to pronounce his name. Yeah. I don't know. Again, not a player I know particularly much about. I'd seen a couple of the articles in the press and things. He looks an okay capture. Certainly the last time they raided St Gallen, I think it was Florent Camberi did well. I'm sure he arrived from there. And also the Aidan McGady deal that we were talking about last pod has gone through and is all signed, sealed and delivered. Anything else yourself for Hibs?
No, they were playing today against Hartlepool and Friendly. It was on YouTube at 11 o'clock this morning, and both in the same Spanish camp, the 1-2-0. McGeady came on in the second half, and the Hibs fans were espousing his brilliance and how he was head and shoulders above everybody. And then I thought to myself, well, Hartlepool are League Two. So let's not get carried away. I think it was Ewan Henderson and Ryan Porteous for the goals. It was 2-0 they won.
Right, okay.
On
to Kilmarnock, I've got they signed young Lewis Mayo from Rangers. I think that's a loan.
Yep.
No card there. They released a guy called Justin Deveney. No card, obviously, with it being Kilmarnock and just coming up. And funny you mention actually Hartlepool because Ewan Murray left there as well, so there'll not be any card for him because I'm guessing they'll obviously will look at releasing the Kilmarnock set of cards.
Oh, yeah, I would think so.
And he's joined that Hartlepool revolution of Paul Hartley, along with probably about four or five other lower Scottish League players.
Yeah, I still think you might see another couple of cards get red X's beside them with some of the Scottish managers going to these type clubs.
Definitely.
Hartley said he's going to look to Scotland. So
he's slightly off topic, but he signed about four or five players from Scotland already. He signed the guy Regan Tumility that used to be Dundee United from Wraith.
That's and, right.
He's just signed Jake Hastie. No, I know there's no Rangers cards, but Jake Hastie's left Rangers to go to Hartlepool. So, yeah, there's a bit of activity there. Rangers have signed a couple of youth players, certainly one from Inverness that's quite highly rated. But in truth, I think he'd be far too young to be getting a card when they come out. And they also were in the process of selling the young lad, Wilson, to Aston Villa for about £350,000, £400,000. That's the 16-year-old striker. But apart from that, there's not much else coming out of Ibrox that's concrete.
No, it's just speculation stuff. Obviously, I think there was Morelos talked about still moving away, and there was also they've been linked with Ross Stewart if that does happen, things like that. One that did link into the Ross Stewart one I seen just a couple of days ago was linking if Ross Stewart was to move to Ibrox, that Sunderland were set to move for one Bruce Anderson. To replace him. So, and it wouldn't be a bad, you know, we both know that Bruce Anderson's got the goals in him.
Yeah.
Certainly against Dundee. If he could play Dundee every week, he'd be laughing. But that was that one. One other one that I seen today, it was actually sent over to me by Weaselmont on Twitter, and I've seen it on various sources just now, and I'm looking at it on a forum. Jamal Amofa.
Yeah.
From Ado Den Haag, I think it was.
Den Haag, he's got a card.
Has a card, and he's been linked with Aberdeen. But he's also been linked with a couple of clubs, so not just Aberdeen. So there was one on the market that was sitting about £25, and it very quickly disappeared. I think the lad must have got loads of offers, went and had a look and found out, oh, right, okay. But when you mentioned Pavel Trader, he's sitting there with a super rare of it,
yes,
that all of a sudden he may well be able to use and sell. So there you go.
Yeah, the last couple of clubs I've got, obviously we mentioned St Mirren signing Declan Gallagher from Aberdeen, who has a card. They also signed a young lad, Australian international, but born in South Africa, Keanu Bacchus from Western Sydney Wanderers. Apart from that, nothing much else at St Mirren. St Johnston got Adam Montgomery from Celtic on loan, who was at Aberdeen on loan.
Yeah.
And Ross County have made three signings, to my knowledge, this week. They've got a young lad, Kazim Olagai, from Southampton on loan, no card. Jordi Hawula, who was at Coventry for a while, if my memory serves me right, but has joined them from Doncaster. Again, no card, but given it's pretty much Jordan White that's the card at Ross County for up front, if there's a new card for him, he might be a half-decent, I would think, very, very low-budget worthy acquisition.
Yep.
And they've also signed Ben Purrington, who is a pretty solid left-back from Charlton Lower League, that I would think he'll come up here and do relatively well. So apart from that, the only other transfer that sort of sparked my interest, and I don't know if you've seen it, was Ollie Burke has left Sheffield United and joined Werder Bremen.
Oh, really?
Now,
okay.
Amazingly, for anyone that's listening, and this is honestly, this sounds really, really hard to believe, but Ollie Burke is the highest ever cumulative transfer fee for a Scottish player, because he's transferred so many times for multiple millions of pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And there is no Scotsman that has accumulated as much in transfer fees, amazingly. And that's eclipsing guys like Duncan Ferguson in his heyday, you know, and all the Scottish guys that have moved for, like, you know, Craig Gordon, 9 million, and all these guys and stuff in the past. And it's Ollie Burke has just further lengthened his lead. So there we go. That's the Scottish roundup.
They do seem to like him in Germany. but the other one that I was just going to mention, just when you mentioned St Mirren, they had a 3-0 win last night against Crusaders. And one of the players that I'd mentioned ages ago, you tipped him on the episode 4 podcast where we talked about the Scottish launch, which was Mark O'Hara. He obviously moved to St Mirren and he got a goal last night. I tweeted a little bit about it and all of a sudden I had a follow from one Mark O'Hara. So I found that just amusing, and it actually was him. So that was quite interesting on that one. But yeah, so that's been quite quite thorough in terms of, you know, again, we want to try and give people as much information. I did say on one of the podcasts, you're not going to get any better Scottish information than you are going to get from Russ in terms of, you know, it's going to be statistic-based, not going to be opinion-based, it's going to be stat-based, because he is a stato. He even has the pyjamas and the house coat to go with it.
I do.
I wholeheartedly back that. I'll do my best. I'll post news and things like that, and I've got my own opinions on players, and we don't always agree, as we discussed last week. But moving on in terms of talking about some players, Russ, I've picked up a few, or I've got a few cards tonight to talk about, just in terms of, I was looking at summer cards for threshold players, you know, and I was thinking about the managers who are really going to be looking to move some ETH into a rare goalkeeper, be it a playing one, be it a DNP one. So I've picked out 5 players, and they are from the Scottish League. And the reason I've picked them out is because I know more about these players than I would be saying, you know, picking out a Turkish player, and I would know more so. So the 5 that I've got, I'll rattle through mine first, and I'll, you know, if you've got any players there I kind of recommend, we'll bounce back and forth. I've went with 2 of them. I have my gallery. I'll be upfront about that. The first one is Conor Randall from Ross County. I've mentioned him on a few podcasts. 26 years of age, right back. He is their starting right back. He's a former Liverpool kid. Had 3 appearances for them in 2016. 2 starts. As I say, the only thing with him being a fullback, as we all know, fullbacks do get hit, or do seem to get hit more with the lost possession and losing a point every time they lose possession. So that is always one that stings. However, you're picking him up on the market for £27 as a rare. These are all rare cards and rare prices. £27 for a rare starting defender. I think that's mad price, to be honest. His 3-day average is actually 24. So you can maybe negotiate that down. But 24 quid, people pay that for limited. Do you know what I mean? So the next one, he's a firm favourite of Russ. He's a super rare for Russ, is Declan Gallagher. 31 years of age, centre-back at St Mirren now. New signing, expect him to start. Market price was 0.038. That's the same as his last 3 days, and that is £35 as we speak. And again, I think that's solid for another defender there. Another one I own, Ross Callaghan from Ross County again. Attacking midfielder, 28 years of age. He played 35 out of 38 games last season. 4 goals, 1 assist. With County having lost so many creative players, you've lost Hungbo, Regan Charles-Cook, Blair Spittle, and obviously they've brought in new players. But I could see Callaghan getting more of a, you know, I expect him to have an even bigger role this year, to be honest. And at the minute, his last auction price or the last sale price was £31. Now, the cheapest on the market is £75, but obviously boys are doing that. They're banging up prices, but his recent sale price is £31. And again, for a starter, 35 out of 38 games. You know, that's what, 90% of the games he's played, or 95% of the games he's played. Next one, one that I mentioned, and I kind of said on Twitter that I didn't necessarily rate him as a striker. However, if you're looking for a threshold one, Joel Newble, or Newbley from Livingston, spent the first half of last season on loan to Arbroath, but he came back. He played 16 games for them and only had 3 assists, but no goals. However, that was during the period where Bruce Anderson was out injured as well, so that may well give him an opportunity to get more assists on the board, because Anderson's a poacher. And you're picking him up. A 3-day average was £45, and there's one on the market at the moment for £65. His last 15 was £40. And he played all the games, basically, that he was available for. Last one is Greg Kilty, who we gave away in our giveaway last week. And I actually sold mine yesterday to help fund my move for Bruce Anderson. But Greg Kilty, 25 years of age, attacking midfielder, second striker, he's kind of listed as on Transfer Market. I'd say that's probably about right. Kind of plays in the hole behind, really. For St Mirren, 25 appearances last season. He was hampered a bit with injury. We've tipped him, we've given him away. His 3-day average for his rare card, £28. The market price was £50. But again, have a look at the auctions. Wait and see when boys have got rewards coming through. See if you can pick them up at the more appropriate prices before the boom comes. If you can pick those cards up, I think you'll find in a few weeks' time they start to increase in value anyway before the season starts, just through, you know, natural increases because the league coming back. So that was my five, all under, I believe, well, 45 for the striker and everything else under sort of 30, 35 quid. I think that's not a bad wee selection to go and have a look at there.
Yeah, definitely. I think just to mention, I don't have five. The only five I've got is the challenge five.
Oh, I look forward to
last week. But just a wee point on Ross Callaghan. I think Ross Callaghan is a really good acquisition, and certainly at the price that he's going at the moment. And the main point for that, last season, obviously, Joseph Hungbo and Regan Charles Cook got on a lot of the penalties. But prior to that, Ross Callaghan was a penalty taker.
Yeah.
And I would fully expect him to return the penalties, which will give you the opportunity for decisive action scores. And I would expect that he will significantly rise on last five and last 15 average, I would probably think, by September.
Good. I wholeheartedly hope so, because he's sitting in my gallery. But again, like we spoke about that with Lewis Ferguson, didn't we? Because his decisives all come from his free kicks and his penalties.
Yeah.
And obviously last season, I would imagine, I don't know for definite, but without going and checking it, I'd imagine Blair Spittle was probably on set pieces in terms of direct free kicks, because he was good. Hungbo obviously scored the one against Dundee that I think got goal of the season in a game that to this day baffles me. It was, I think there's some quality there to go and have a look at. And I think it's worth, you know, doing a bit of digging. I'm going to try and do some threshold videos this weekend and put them up on my YouTube. If I do, I'll post a link to them from the socials there as well, just to kind of give some, you know, and it's not going to all be Scottish based. I'll do a bit more research for those. But we talked about it when the Scottish League came in, didn't we, Russ? It's being able to talk about what you know.
Well, yeah.
And the Scottish League is kind of what we know. Yeah, there's unknown quantities coming into it, but I'm going to recommend the ones that I do know about. And I think some of these cards are grossly underpriced when you look at equivalents in Belgium, for example. You know, it's grossly underpriced. So that's what I've got on those. Do you have any players at all, or you want to move on to your challenge?
Just move on to the challenge.
Move on to the challenge. Okay. So let's just say we've both
got breakfast to get by the time they listen to that.
No way. So I mean, I usually listen to this on my way in just to make sure it sounds all right. So let's look at the challenge. So last week at the end of the podcast, you didn't have a challenge for me. So I gave you one, and I believe it was five players who had names associated with automobiles.
You did.
If memory serves. So what have you come up with in that one?
Well, the first one was probably really, really obvious. And of course, that was Dooge Coletta Carr.
Okay.
So been linked, I think he's been linked to West Ham and things quite a bit, obviously moving over from France. Certainly the Football Index crew that, now plays Serrero probably know him quite well, etc. But I thought that was a really obvious one, nice and easy to get started. Number two, I have Nissan Burkhardt. So good old Nissan, bit of Japanese automobiles there for us. And he plays at Freiburg, I believe. Number three, a really easy one that's been mentioned on the pod, and it's Courtney Ford.
Good, I like it. I like it.
Courtney Ford, nice and solid there. This one, you're probably gonna struggle with this one, but Benjamin Lambeau.
I'll take it.
I think I actually had a look, and he's one of these cards that was released at the very start of the game. I think there are six defender cards. None of them have moved in the last year. They're all with the original holders and things like that. But Benjamin Lambeau, I thought, was a wee bit tongue-in-cheek. And I couldn't not give you Alex Ferrari at Sampdoria. I'll be honest, when I got the challenge, I was desperately looking for something with a link to Wacky Races. So any of our British listeners would hopefully remember the iconic cartoon with Perfect and Dick Dastardly and the Troop Troop and the Anthill Mob. And I was looking, and I could remember all the characters. I was easily able to remember and visualise and picture all the characters, but I couldn't remember the names of all the vehicles. So I thought, right, there's bound to be like a Wacky Races fandom or something.
Yeah.
Fandom, whatever you call them. Showing the age there. However, I went and I looked and I was like, there has to be. And I couldn't find anything. There was a few obvious ones, obviously, some iconic cars. Had Kit Simons been still and playing football, he would have been used from the Knight Rider iconic days. And I think somebody messaged me, you've got to use Sergio Bus, you know, things like that. So there's quite a few of them. There's some Mitsubishis and there's some Hondas, and if you're a petrol head from the 90s, I suppose, and the FTOs and the GTOs. I always thought I was going to buy one of those as a teen, and then I realised the insurance on them was astronomical.
I was like that when I was looking at some of my cars when I was a young man as well. The price of some being rockets certainly goes up. But yeah, that's
what I've got. So have you got? I thought, do you know what? I'm not going to prepare a challenge for you. I thought you maybe come up with some more nonsense for me just to finish off. But I don't know.
I hadn't, but let me think quickly on the spot. Five players whose name could be a pop singer or a band.
Pop singer or a band, okay.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Yeah,
let's go with that. I mean, I'm still going back to that week where you gave me the porn stars. I mean, that one is going to go down in history as ridiculous, quite frankly. But yeah, that was probably that one. But I don't have anything else to add tonight. Well, today, tomorrow, tonight, whenever you listen to it. I don't think, have you got anything else there, Russ?
No, just a thank you once again, just to, I think we've got a few new countries that have appeared on the charts this past week. The pod seems to be spreading to more and more ears, which is really, really great, and we're essentially very grateful for it. We'll continue to try and give as much sort of genuine Serrer info, based on the actual game and the gameplay. And then we'll also try and give as much player info and sort of up-to-date or up-to-the-day club info to help you make your decisions in Global and Challenger. So
absolutely. And even in terms of the non-Serrer stuff, if you've got any ideas for a retro chat you'd like us to discuss, then, drop a DM to the account at AVFDD. Who put my teeth back in at AVFTD pod? There we go. And we'll one of us will answer you and we'll add it into the podcast. So without further ado, take care, guys. We will speak to you all again soon. Enjoy your game weeks and good luck to everyone. Take care.